Welcome to Module 2 of the Virtual Instructional Leadership Challenge. I'm Justin Bader, and in this section, we're going to explore the nature of teaching and instructional leadership and why it's so important to take an evidence-driven approach. Several years ago, I had the opportunity to interview the great Charlotte Danielson about her book, Talk About Teaching, Leading Professional Conversations. And while Danielson is best known for her framework for teaching, the teacher evaluation rubric that's used all over the world, I think some of her best work is in this book, Talk About Teaching. And I want to share a quote from the early pages of that book, where I think she very accurately describes the nature of teaching. She says, "Teaching entails expertise. Like other professions, professionalism in teaching requires complex decision-making in conditions of uncertainty. If one acknowledges, as one must, the cognitive nature of teaching, then conversations about teaching must be about the cognition." And that, my friends, is why I believe in taking an evidence-driven approach to instructional leadership. If we want to talk about the heart of teaching, the cognition behind what we're seeing in the classroom, we've got to start with what we can actually see, but we can't stop there. We start with evidence, but we have to use that evidence as a gateway into the real substance, which is the thinking, the teacher cognition that serves as the heart of teacher practice. So the evidence-driven philosophy goes a little bit like this, that teaching, like instructional leadership, is largely about making decisions. It's largely about deciding what to teach, how to teach it, what students already know, how to approach it, how to meet the needs of individual learners. There are so many decisions that teachers make that if we forget that decision-making is really the crux of teaching as a professional practice, then we're going to miss the point. And a lot of our feedback conversations are going to miss the mark. When we have better evidence of teacher practice, we make better decisions as instructional leaders. And when teachers have better evidence to work with, they make better decisions for their students. And the primary task that we have the opportunity to engage in as instructional leaders is conversation about teacher practice. And if those conversations are going to be more than just philosophy, if they're going to actually be about the teacher practice and improving it, then we need evidence, right? We need evidence to have something to talk about, but then we need to actually talk about that evidence, make sense of it, and have the opportunity to improve that decision-making. So as a starting point, that philosophy of being evidence-driven is a little bit more than being data-driven, right? We're not simply looking at student assessments and saying, okay, well, now we know what we need to do. What we need to do after we look at student assessments is often think and make sense of those assessments. And I wanted to put this idea of being data-driven into the proper context, because often I think there's this perception in the profession that all we need to do is look at data and then we'll know what to do. And that, my friends, is not the case. There is a model called the DIKW pyramid that says basically that we can go up levels of abstraction and levels of kind of processing to get higher in the pyramid. At the very base of the pyramid is simply data, right? Data is the kind of, the raw numbers, the assessment results, or whatever kind of data we're working with. And when we add meaning to that data, we transform it into information. And that transformation process occurs at every step of the pyramid. So when we make sense of data, we have information. When we make sense of information and make meaning out of that, we have knowledge. And when we make meaning out of knowledge, we have wisdom. And don't we all want to be wise as instructional leaders? Don't we want the teachers that we work with to be wise as they make decisions for their students? Ultimately, where this is all headed is better decision making. So if we were to add kind of a new cap to the pyramid here, the top level would be the decisions that we are making. And as you may recall in Module 1, we talked about instructional leadership as the practice of making and implementing operational and improvement decisions in the service of student learning. And as we saw in the quote from Charlotte Danielson just now, teaching really is cognitive work. It's all about the decisions that teachers are making on behalf of student learning in their classroom. So we have an opportunity as instructional leaders to engage in what I call sense-making conversations with teachers. As we're talking about the evidence, as we're talking about the decisions, we're making sense of teacher practice with the teacher in what's inherently a social activity, right? Talking with another person is inherently a social activity. And the teacher's identity, the teacher's sense of self as a professional, as a person who is competent, you know, a person who has a history as a professional, all of those are relevant to that conversation. And we use some of the context clues of the particular teaching situation and our own kind of stories that we tell about ourselves to arrive at plausible conclusions. And this is what Carl Weick called sense making. Now, a lot of my doctoral research on kind of organizational decision making centered on Weick's work around sense making. But I want to position feedback conversations as a fundamentally social sense-making activity and not simply the transfer of a suggestion from the instructional leader to the teacher. I believe that teachers change their practice as a result of sense-making conversations, not as the result of getting feedback or getting a suggestion from someone who's just observed them. And I think the difference between those is massive, right? If I am going to observe for a while and write down some feedback and give it to the teacher without talking to them, and they're supposed to just kind of look at that feedback and decide whether to implement it or not, my odds are probably not very good in actually changing teacher practice, right? If I want to change that teacher's practice, the best thing for me to do is to make the time to sit down and talk with that teacher about what I saw, talk about our shared expectations, get some insight into the teacher's own thinking and decision-making. And from there, I will have a much better opportunity to actually change teacher practice. And that's what we call a sense-making conversation. So now that we've introduced some of these concepts, I want to encourage you to go to your journal and think through your own experience. And even outside of your work as an educator, think about your own life, your own values, your own belief system. And reflect on this. When has a conversation that you've had with someone else, again, doesn't have to be in a professional context, led to a change in how you think, and especially a change in your practice? Maybe it was about recycling. Maybe, you know, you're of an age that recycling was not universal when you were a kid. So at some point along the way, you decided to start recycling. Maybe somebody had a conversation with you. Think about a conversation that has changed your perspective and changed your practice, and make some notes about that in your journal. And then I'd like you to reflect on the second question here. How did evidence factor in to this conversation? I'm going to guess that it wasn't entirely abstract, that there was some form of concrete evidence that factored in to your change in perspective or practice. Think about that, and when you've completed that part of your journal, you're ready to move on to the next section.